Welcome to Episode 7 of the 1987 WNBC radio documentary, The New York Knicks, Those Championship Seasons. I'm Bud Mishkin. This is a 9-episode series that I originally wrote and produced and created in 1987, voiced by my then WNBC radio colleague Gary Bridges, about one of the most beloved teams in American sports history, the New York Knicks of the late 60s and early 70s. Marv Albert would eventually become known nationally for his work on NBC Sports, but in the late 60s and early 70s, he was a lifeline to millions of New York Knicks fans calling games on the radio. Cable TV was in its infancy, and only a few thousand could watch Knicks home games in New York. So if you wanted to follow home games, you had to listen to the radio and Marv. And that's the story of Episode 7 of the New York Knicks, Those Championship Seasons.
The championship years of the Knicks had an impact on the lives of many New Yorkers, but it affected few as much as a young man from Brooklyn, Marv Albert. Marv became a lifeline for fans.
The only television of Knick games at the time, there'd be occasional games on during the week, there'd be occasional network games, but even the playoffs, cable was just beginning, and it was such a small audience. And even the fifth game and the seventh game were on delay. We were the only way that anybody who didn't have a ticket to a sold-out Madison Square Garden could hear what was going on in one of the biggest sports events in the history of the city.
And Marv Albert's star rose with the fortunes of the Knicks. Len Berman.
Well, I think what happens to broadcasters is they get pegged to events or moments in time. For many people, for example, Dick Enberg will always be UCLA basketball and the great UCLA-Houston game. And if it wasn't for the Knicks, it would have been very different for Marv. But people are attracted to major winning teams, and it's kind of like the reflected glory. I mean, the announcers bask in it, the fans bask in it, the players bask in it.
Marv's brother, Steve Albert.
You can't compare that era in broadcasting sports to this one now. This is the television age and the cable age, and it's unfortunate because I think that's the way a basketball game should be listened to in its proper form. I think that in the purest sense, there's nothing that compares to listening to a hotshot basketball announcer. And I think what happened was the chemistry was right, the combinations were right. Marv was just so adept at calling the play-by-play that he lent himself to the broadcasts in such a grand way. I mean, it was not only a great team that had been assembled, but it was just fun to listen to his rapid-fire delivery. And I think it went hand-in-hand, and the fans appreciated it and still do to this day.
Marv was taken under the wing of sportscasting legend Marty Glickman.
I was in Europe at the time, and my flight was grounded because of bad weather. And I called from Gander in Newfoundland and suggested they use Marv, and of course they did use Marv.
To this day, I feel that Marty purposely told the station that he could not get back because he had promised that he would give me a break. Allow me to do at least one game. First Knick game that I broadcast took place at the Boston Garden. It was the Knicks and the Celtics. The snowstorm was in the eastern area of the United States, so it was very, very tough to get from New York to Boston. So I took an all-night train ride and lugged this huge tape recorder with me and got into Boston about 6 in the morning and listened to tapes for hours. It was an afternoon game at the Boston Garden, and I listened to tapes of Marty doing games just to review the phrases in my head, and tapes of my doing games. I used to do them from the press box area at Madison Square Garden because I was a ball boy for the Knicks, so I was allowed to occasionally do stray away from my duties and go up and do games or do college basketball games just to get it into my head, just to get a pattern. And my brother Al came with me to lend moral support. In fact, he kept statistics that day.
I was his trusty statistician and valet, and we hustled down to Grand Central Station. I was about 15 at the time, and Marv, I think, was about 23, 24, something along those lines. We hopped the train, got into Boston, rolled in about 3, 4 in the morning, checked right into the old Madison Hotel, And because of my extensive statistician work ahead, I went right to sleep. I had to be well rested. And Marv bought all the early Boston papers and did all his work, get everything down. He had to be ready. This was his shot. He knew that it was make or break.
And it was a rough start because we went to the press gate of the Boston Garden, and here are two kids, and they didn't believe we were the Nick broadcasters.
At that point, I was 15 and looked like 12. Marv looked like he was 17 years old, and they just didn't believe it. They thought a couple of guys are just trying to crash the game. I mean, they, I'm here to do the announcing for the Knicks. And we stood there for a while, Marv trying to explain his way through.
And I had to shuffle through my briefcase and show them the scripts from CBS Radio before they finally realized that we were telling the truth. In fact, Eddie Donovan, who was then the coach of the club, was called out of the locker room to identify me. And I fortunately had known him. I'd met him a couple times, and he said, yes, he is doing the game.
After all, it was practically old hat for the Albert brothers to work together calling a sporting event.
We had gone through this so many times before in our house, you know, in Manhattan Beach in Brooklyn. We had a little room set aside with a TV set and a table. It was our press box, and we'd watch games and turn the sound of the TV off. And, you know, Marv would do the games, and I would do the stats and control the crowd record. We had a crowd record and just make sure the reel-to-reel tape recorder didn't run out of tape. And, you know, we'd done it so many times before. This basically was, the real thing, but it never struck us. We were never in awe of the situation. It's just like, you know, Marv's time had arrived.
There were live events at the Albert household as well.
We got very creative. Downstairs, we had a basement, which we called the Kensington Gardens. We lived on Kensington Street. And we played everything there. I mean, ping pong, our ping pong play-by-play was a specialty, and we figured if we could call play-by-play for ping pong, we could probably do anything.
What about the Albert parents?
They figured it kept us off the streets, so they just closed the door to that our little press box room and let us do what we want. I think they thought we were nuts. I think at this point in our careers, they sit back in amazement that we were able to develop this into a career, because the irony is, and what we were doing in Manhattan Beach in Brooklyn, we're now doing on a professional level and getting paid for it. And it was nothing, you know, it was nothing different. It's just that now we don't have to bring our crowd record.
The dream was coming true for Al Albert's brother, Marv.
I remember in his first year when he used to sit in for Marty Glickman and occasionally for Jim Gordon doing his, his Ranger games. I used to listen at that time to Bill Mazur, who ironically I ended up working with for 4 years with the Nets and Islanders. And Bill's talk show on WNBC at that point was the only radio talk show in New York and was, you know, was the hot talk show. Anybody into sports would be tuning in and calling in. And I remember one time somebody had called and asked him, what do you think about that Marv Albert? And I mean, I just got chills just to hear somebody mentioning Marv.
But Marty Glickman again played a key role in Marv's success story.
WHN, which had carried the New York Knicks basketball games, asked me to do those games again. And I was doing other things at that time. I was not interested in doing the New York Knickerbockers any longer. I'd done basketball for many years. And I suggested a bright young man who worked for me named Marv Albert. They said, who's he? And I actually had to sell them a bill of goods on using Marv. I think Marv is a young man I'm very proud of. But make no mistake, I didn't make Marv Albert. Marv Albert made Marv Albert. And certainly in recent years, particularly on TV, he did the job himself. I helped get him started. I'll admit to that. There isn't any problem or question about that. But Marv Albert is the fellow who worked at it and who developed his own style.
Marv was the first of the Albert brothers to make it as a sportscaster, but two others followed. Brother Al Albert.
The three of us take so much pride in what each of us, are trying to accomplish. When I've heard, the yes and, kick save and a beauty, I'm proud. I'm very proud of it.
Marv Albert's stock rose with the championship Knicks. And in 73, the Knicks were headed back to the NBA Finals. That story is next.
The team that started the 1972-73 season had a bit of a different look than the team that won the championship in 1970. One of their fiercest rivals was now a teammate. the 1972-73 season, next time on Episode 8 of the New York Knicks, those championship seasons. Thanks for listening. I'm Bud Mishkin.